Okay, welcome to this special episode of the Strength Training for Runners podcast. Today, we're joined by Andy Kay, who is rapidly becoming known as one of the top strength and conditioning coaches in the running world, really. He's the strength and conditioning coach to the likes of Jake Whiteman, last year's world 1500 meter champion, and Hobbs Kesler, more recently, the world road running mile champion, and actually broke the world record in the process in doing so. Coached to numerous other high level middle distance runners as well. So thanks for coming on, Andy. It's good to have you here.
Oh, you're very welcome. Cheers for having me, Tim. Appreciate it.
No problem. So let's just dive straight in. As I've mentioned, you are rapidly becoming really the go-to SNC coach for world-class middle distance runners. Mentioned you're the SNC coach to Jake Whiteman, Hobbs Kesler. So you do have a hugely impressive resume. I believe you started working with Jake back in 2016. You can obviously correct me if that's not right, but about 2016. So it'd just be really interesting to learn initially how that came about, how you started working with Jake, and then also how you began to develop a crop of top level middle distance runners in your sort of stable, if you like.
Yeah. So, 2016, you're right. So it sort of came about, I was coaching out of St. Mary's University. I just sort of finished working in kind of team sport, doing a few different things. And I was kind of working on my own sort of independent brand, if you like, what is now Pure Performance. And at the time, so Jake was moving down to the area to train in Teddington, which, I don't know if you know the area, but it was and kind of still is like an endurance running hub, kind of like Loughborough, but a little bit smaller. And at the time he was moving there to train, use the facilities, that kind of stuff. And his dad, Jeff, his coach, people probably know now from there's a video from the World Champs where Jeff was commentating as Jake won Worlds, which was obviously quite nice. He basically got in touch with one of my old lecturers from uni, Rich Blagrove, who's a really big name in running S&C. He's written a lot on the subject and doctorate on the subject. He wanted to work with Rich, but he was just leaving to go University of Birmingham, maybe, I think it was at the time, to work there. So he actually linked me up and sort of said, like, if you are still looking at, you know, Andy's here, he's a former student, he's kind of working in the field. So it was just right place, right time, I guess. We made that link and we sort of agreed to a bit of a trial, you know, to see how it goes, make sure, you know, they were happy with me, I was a good fit as well, vice versa. And the rest is history, really. We kind of started to working together there. Things start to go well. And we've been working together 7 years now. So ups and downs, lots of good times and difficult ones, obviously, with injuries and things like that. But plenty of medals to show for it. And yeah, that's really what kind of started my journey into the world of track and, running, really. So 1500 meter and everything around it, track and field in general. But because my background, that I'm not a, I run, yes, but I'm not by any means middle distance runner. So that was kind of really where it started, and that's become the niche now, really. That's kind of the majority of what I do.
Cool. Yeah. So would it be fair to say, like, Jake kind of, that was the spur for other athletes to come? It was obviously Jake's had massive success, and then that kind of, as a result of that, brought other people in?
It really was, yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? You sort of, so you work in PT as well, don't you? So Previously I was PT, and I remember we used to always kind of, you'd hear about these PTs who had like celebrities, and you know, that whole thing of once they got one, that's it. They get loads and loads. And it's kind of like that, I guess. Like I got Jake, who, you know, I was very fortunate to, and he's turned out to be very good. And like you say, when people see, and at the time as well, S&C and running was still very new, and it still kind of is, but it was really new then, and people were looking at what we were doing and sort of like, well, that's going really well. Like, what are they doing? And the inquiries would come, or people would speak to Jake and, you know, what is it you're actually doing? You know, you're getting faster, you're not being injured, what's going on? And then, yeah, people just sort of came knocking on the door, really. Like, the business has just grown from there. And like you say, the sort of referrals, friend of a friend, and people to see what you're up to and want to get involved. And yeah, that really was the impetus, I think. You know, these things, sometimes it's just, you know, right place, right time, and making the most of the opportunity, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And it seems like, well, it's spread beyond just like your local area as well. You know, you've got, we've already mentioned Hobbs Kesler across the continent, and and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're kind of working with athletes up and down the country. You've talked about traveling down north, up north rather, and then coming back south. Yeah. Like, I'm guessing that's in order to work with clients. So
yeah,
so you're a busy guy working with different people in all kinds of different places, which I guess it in its own right has it presents its own set of challenges. So in terms of how you actually deliver your strength and conditioning to your athletes, we could like look into that a little bit, because obviously even the more local athletes, they're often like Jake Wyman, the likes of that, they're often going away for training camps for significant periods of time. You've mentioned, I think, in previous stuff you've put out there about an app you use. So is it kind of a case that everyone that works with you is prescribed their training through that app, and then you get to see them on a sort of as and when basis, depending on when schedule fits, and that's kind of like a bonus to it, or like how do you make it all work really?
I was really sort of up until COVID, I guess, the way I was doing it was kind of the traditional like Excel spreadsheets, you know, write a program, send it out. And that was kind of early on in the business, this side of it. It was kind of finding my feet with that, because like you've identified with runners, really, there's a season, if you like. They're in the winter now, so they'll be doing lots of, you know, aerobic work. If they've got time and resources, they'll be doing that at altitude most of the time. So kind of from here onwards, a lot of them will disappear now till, you know, like January, really. They'll be at places like Flagstaff or, you know, Kenya and stuff like that. And it's difficult to keep in touch with them or to check in and physically be there. So just giving them the program is really just one element of it. It's only one piece of the puzzle. You don't get the feedback, you don't get to see the numbers, you don't get as much kind of communication. And then so kind of from the start of COVID, really, I the business had grown. It was even harder to see people. It was impossible, wasn't it, to see people? So I started to look at different options. And I basically field tested with a few athletes, various different apps, websites, programs, and stuff like that. And we settled on the Train Heroic platform, which a lot of people do use. And it's quite sort of customizable. So that's like the basis of it. So really what the athlete gets on their side is each day, or they look at the week, they can see each day what they've got programmed in. And within that, they can do their wellness monitoring, which is really important. So looking at things like sleep, stress, fatigue, just overall wellness, really, soreness. And you can track those things going forwards as like a subjective measure. And then they can obviously follow their session. There's notes in there, videos in there. They can put in any kind of feedback, what weights they did it feel hard, RPE, anything like that. We can also have direct chat as well. So we can chat within the app, which is also really helpful if you know, there's lots of athletes or we work in different time zones and things. What you don't want to do is be across like WhatsApp and Messenger and this and that. And it's nice to have everything in one place. And it's good to refer back to in reviews as well. So that's like the actual delivery when they're away. In terms of face-to-face, what we try to do really with a lot of the guys who are full-time, like elite level, they are away a lot. So we try to prioritize the time here with things like testing. So we did some last week, and there's some coming up in the next 2 weeks, where we'll get them in, do a battery of tests, establish kind of where we're at to this point in the season, and just gives us a really good chance to sort of pinpoint exactly where the, you know, deficiencies are, or any kind of deficits, bias, any sort of hangover from injury, anything like that. So we can really start to make the most of the next few weeks, because really winter is where we make the big impact, because they're not racing. They've got time and kind of energy to put into strength, power, speed, whatever it is they need to do. Once the season comes around, then it really is. It's just sort of maintaining and sharpening and trying to minimize fatigue between races. So really testing the main thing we do face-to-face. And then anytime they're back in the country or in the area, we can jump in the gym, do a session, check in, just make sure things like technique are good and weights are being pushed on. So it's a little bit all over the place, but you are really subject to the season. And it's with running, it's not too bad. It's quite a traditional, if you look at like periodization and sports themselves, it's kind of your traditional sort of format of there's a GPP block, and then there's a strength block and then you've got the season itself. Whereas like things like football, rugby, anything with a long season, it's a lot of concurrent in-season periodization, which is kind of harder to work with, really. But yeah, in a roundabout way, that's how we make it work.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. Yeah. So essentially, like the programming is through the app, and then and then the in-person stuff, as a generalization, is more there for to do the testing to help inform that programming.
Oftentimes, yeah.
Yeah. The stuff you've talked about there, they touched on a couple of areas which I was going to ask you on. One was related to the app, one was related to that testing. So we'll quickly touch on the app stuff first and then move on to the testing. So really, I was interested to know what made you go with Training Heroics rather than anything else? And I think you mentioned the wellness monitoring and stuff like that. Was that kind of one of the key differentiators? Or
yeah, so I won't name the other ones for the sake of kind of slagging him off, but yeah, we tried there was maybe five or six, and I narrowed it down to three that I kind of field tested with a group of athletes. There's one other that was, I would say, was really good in terms of metrics. It was very like sports science, and you could really drill down into kind of the data and get a lot out of it. But for me, with any of these things, it's about athlete kind of or end user ease and kind of compliance.
Yeah.
So I've done it before. You know, I've built like an all singing, all dancing wellness monitoring system on Excel and Google Sheets and stuff. And no one does it because they get up in the morning and they're like, I can't be arsed logging into this. And but you know, if it takes more than 10 seconds, it's not going to happen. So the good thing with Train Heroic was it was really user-friendly, or it is really user-friendly. So that was the one that came out on top unanimously, just in terms of what's the easiest for them to just open and use and follow, and what kind of looks slickest, if you like. Probably at the slight compromise from a coach's perspective, but it's not enough to warrant making it a little bit unusable. And for me, that's the biggest thing. Like with PT, it's all these things. Compliance is key, isn't it? Write the best program in the world, and if someone doesn't follow it, it's useless. That was the big win for me.
Yeah, cool. That's really interesting. So now we'll just quickly move on to the other aspect you were talking about, which was the testing aspect, which is something I think I've seen you talk about previously. I think you've written an Athletics Weekly article where you talk about that, and I think you did an Instagram Live with Jake not that long ago. And I think you touched on that briefly. So I was quite interested to know, is there like a set battery of tests that you kind of use and it's the same every time? And if so, are you happy to sort of divulge what some of those tests are? And then kind of going on from that, how do you use some of that test data to then inform your programming? What kind of decisions does it lead to, kind of thing?
Yeah, so in terms of the test battery, it's something I've added to and tweaked over the years, but I'd say the core test and the core philosophy really is the same. So what I tried to get out of it is basically kind of complete overview of the athlete themselves and their physiological quality. So what we try to do, first of all, is kind of force testing. So we're looking at peak force, peak isometric force in a single leg squat and a single leg push from the calf, so like isometric calf raise, if you like. And we know from data that if we can hit certain kind of loads on these relatives, so times body weight, we're gonna be in a better place in terms of injury prevention and also running economy and force output. So the number there really is the relative one. So we're looking to hit, like, just for argument's sake, like 2.5-3 times body weight an ankle push. That we know that's a good sign compared to kind of the injury risk if you're down below those numbers. And also, again, the bias, the left to right kind of asymmetry is quite important as well. And that gives an idea of the athlete's overall kind of force output, so how strong they are really in those positions. And then we'll look at various jump tests. So again, this does vary and it depends on the person, but we might be looking at a squat jump versus a counter movement jump to see what kind of, how good they are at utilizing the stretch shortening cycle in terms of kind of, if they dip before they jump or that they start from a static position. And we look at something called an eccentric utilization ratio. So how good they are as doing that as a figure. Single leg counter movement jumps, things like drop jumps at various heights, looking at their reactive strength off the floor. And we can build a profile across the heights there. And that's quite helpful for informing what height to use for a drop jump in the program and if they can even tolerate it in the first place. And then even so before that, really, again, it depends if it's a new athlete or there's certain issues going on, we might do some movement screening, basic things like overhead squats, active straight leg raises, that sort of thing. Then that might break out into specific tests around the ankle, knee, hip, anything that kind of jumps out as a potential, something that needs looking at essentially. So yeah, we've got the force, we've got the jumps, the power type stuff. Then we'll look at some local capacity. So things like calf raises, hamstring bridge, trunk holds. So kind of supine side hold, that sort of stuff. So to get an idea of just their local capacity in those muscles, in those areas that we know are potential weaknesses or areas of risk, if you like, for injury. And it gives us an idea then across the board, all the way from endurance, through to strength, through to power, where any weaknesses are. And often you can sort of spot them early on, and it's just a good way to get that low hanging fruit, especially at the start of a season. We go, look, you're really good at this, not so much at this, let's just keep that where it is and really push for this time. or you know, big asymmetries, you might be coming into the season and you've got a massive difference between like left and right hamstring capacity. Well, that's not a good thing. So, you know, again, low hanging fruit is jump on that early, rather than just throw everything at it and hope it works. It just makes it, again, these guys haven't got tons of resources physically to put into S&C because they're doing like, you know, 80 plus miles a week a lot of the time. And that's on top, if you want to put things on top of that and hope to see a change, you've really got to be specific and kind of, you know, it's the old ask a specific question, get a specific answer from the body. But yeah, that's generally where we're going. Again, there might be breakout tests off that. We might, if there's a physio there as well, we might do like handheld dynamometry, look at very specific muscle kind of strengths, imbalances, that sort of stuff.
Brilliant. So maybe quickly just touch on a couple of things you mentioned there. So I think you mentioned the eccentric utilization ratio. That's probably a term that's slightly new to some of the listeners here. So I think if I'm right in saying, I guess a bigger difference between your jump squat where you take a dip prior to jumping and one where you do it from a static position. Yeah. If there's a bigger difference there, then you're going to be that signifies you're using your tendons and ligaments, connective tissues better. And if there's a smaller difference, I guess it's more that you're less effective at that, and the power is more coming from contractile muscle tissue, and then that
might
dictate whether you do more plyometric work or more basic strength work.
So it's almost like your ability to utilize the eccentric loading from a dip. So if you're really not trained that way, there's no ballistic kind of training there, then you're probably going to see quite an even or negative number, and vice versa. If you're really high the other way but the numbers are a bit garbage, it could just be an overall strength thing. It just gives an indicator, helps to build like a profile of the athlete in terms of what is it that you're going to get the most from in this training, because it's going to be minimal input a week. So let's really drill down to like what's the most effective thing we can do.
Out of interest as well, you may not have noticed this trend, but just in case you have, have you seen say more 5k 10k type runners have a slightly different profile with that test to say 8:15 guys? They're better at using the stretch shortening cycle or no real trend?
Yeah, you do tend to find the kind of lower distance guys are a little bit springier. I think by virtue of the event itself, like it tends to be more track, and they are generally stronger and kind of more kind of sprint focused, and a lot of time they'll do more sprint based training or will have done. And that's something that's changing, to be honest with you. A lot of the distance guys now are starting to use like sprint coaches. They're starting to use kind of methodologies more akin to sprinters. So they'll be doing drills and things like that. So even things like A skip speed, stiff leg run type stuff, just kind of track based drills. Or they'll be doing strides and even, using, like I say, sprint coaches really helpful. A lot of the top guys will do that. It just really helps kind of with technique and running economy, but also that springiness, that kind of, we talk about plyometric ability. Running is a plyometric action. So by training like a sprinter, you are going to train that. They do tend to be the more kind of forceful, powerful athletes, if you like.
Yeah.
But it is changing just by virtue of what people are getting into now.
Yeah. And the other thing you kind of touched on was the asymmetries left to right kind of thing. Obviously, track athletes do a lot of track repetitions, same way around the track. Like, is that a trend where they tend to have, say, the right leg a little bit stronger than the left leg because of that?
Do you tend to see asymmetries? I know what you mean. I've always kind of thought that, would it, because we're always running the same way, but not so much, to be honest. They tend to be a little bit more either random or, there's been an injury or something in the past that has led to it. But you do see some big asymmetries, and it doesn't have to be due to an injury. Sometimes it can be these things like functional leg length discrepancies and stuff, or pelvic issues, and it's just the way that they're built. We don't want to see big asymmetries really, because it's just not a good starting point.
Cool. We'll probably leave that there for the testing side of things and move a little bit more into like actual programming a little bit. And I know you've mentioned the importance of tendon stiffness quite a bit in the past, and you've kind of alluded to that with some of the testing there, like the isometric calf tests give a idea as to how your ankle stiffness might be and stuff like that. And I think you've gone into detail previously. I think I mentioned the AW article, and also on your Instagram, there's a clip of Zach Seddon doing like a kind of a sled push in a plyometric-y way. So I think if people wanted to delve a little bit, they probably could find examples, not super comprehensive, but some examples of the type of exercises that you might prescribe for stiffness. What I'd be interested to hear about is almost like the volume programming of that. Like, is it okay? Because obviously tendon stiffness, it's you've talked previously about like the isometric work that helps with that, but also plyometrics themselves and jumping type exercises form a component of that. So do you find you need to, for example, program more of that during periods when, say, they're not in quite as high a mileage block, just to avoid overloading the impact side of things, or how do you go about it?
So I'd say a lot of it comes down to the intensity of what they're doing. So we try to, there are guidelines out there in terms of, like, especially in SCA, I've got kind of guidelines on, foot contacts. A lot of the time we quantify plyometrics by the number of foot contacts per session. I find that a little bit problematic as a catch-all because, you know, no contact is the same. So like a pogo, so like a very low hop, very ankly, 2-footed jump, you know, that's one contact each time you land. But then, you know, bounding or hopping on one leg a distance is also one contact if you were just to do that. And they're very, very different in terms of the impact, the loading. And so we have to exercise a little bit of caution with them. So yes, I'd say the time to push them on is kind of outside of the season, really, because the closer you get to it and once you're within it, it's the intensity of the session. So there's lots of speed work. There's lots of track-based running. So hard surfaces, very fast, very impactful. So to do more of that on top, obviously, is potentially risky. And you're looking at, you know, overuse injuries, tibial stress, that sort of stuff. Stuff you don't really want to cause, do you know what I mean? And also, if they're getting the plyometric load in the sessions, you probably don't need to do as much. But yeah, in the winter, we can really push that on. And it's just about sensibly introducing it. So we try to start, from like the bottom of the tree, if you like. So bilateral, so 2-footed. Again, things like low pogo hops are really, really useful. People slate them nowadays. And I don't see why, because I think it's a really helpful exercise. You can do lots of them. It's not going to cause loads of stress. And it's just about hopping stiffly, using the ankles and just learning to kind of create that tension and utilize lactic energy in a really short contact time, which is in essence a true plyometric. So they're really good. We can progress that onto things like dropping from height off a box to introduce more eccentric loading into a rebound. Once an athlete's stable and they've got a bit of that under their belt, things like hopping on one leg, or things like zigzag hops, anything that's just a little bit more of a stimulus, right through to things like bounding. So hopping, jumping, going from leg to leg, for height, for speed, all really useful. But again, the more we go down that tree, the more intense they become. So that one contact actually, you need to be quantified slightly differently. And I've tried doing that before with like a bit of a system of, you know, a 2-footed hop is half contact or one is, and it just, you can do that, but I think you just have to be sensible. And I think, you know, sticking to the core things of things like pogos, drop jumps, even drills. So stuff, things like A-skips I really rate because it's got that like almost pogo type, you know, low, fast contact whilst rehearsing, you know, really important skills for running. So I tried to put them in a couple of times a week within the S&C sessions. A lot of the times the athletes will do a drill session as well once they get a bit closer to the season, once a week. And that might be some plyos, some track drills, and probably things like some strides as well and build-ups, just to start to get used to the track surface and the kind of the faster running. And then once we hit the season, yeah, we will sort of taper that down to like a maintenance dose, which isn't actually that much. You really don't need an awful lot just to kind of maintain that stiffness and that reactivity through the season.
So aside from the plyometric, the stiffness type work, are there any other key areas that you focus on for runners with their S&C? I know you've kind of touched on a few things here and there, tissue conditioning, and is there anything else that's like a big rock, whether like Olympic lifting or whatever it may be, like any other key focus areas?
So Olympic lifting's a funny one, actually. So in terms of like my own background, I competed in Olympic lifting for 5-6 years and I love the sport. But I only use it, there's maybe one or two athletes I use it with. And that's just because, as you probably know, it takes such a long time to coach it to the point where, you know, you're using effective loads properly. It's very technical. So I don't use it that much nowadays. But ballistic type exercises like Olympic lifting, definitely. So like loaded jumps, whether that's like a heavy trap bar jump or, you know, barbell counter movement jump type stuff or holding dumbbells, anything kind of really rate of force development, heavy strength work. So things like step ups with a little bit of, you know, intensity to them can be quite good. General like lower body force output type things. So stuff like trap bars, split squats, back squats, anything that's going to increase that lower body strength. Big fan of isometrics as well, as I've kind of mentioned before. So real heavy isometrics for the hamstrings in particular, for the calves, for the knees, building that up to things like catches and switches. So if you look at Alex Natera's stuff, he's got some really good resources on that. So progressing it through right through to kind of really aggressive, almost jump and catch with weight type things, because it's getting us closer to the realities of running as well, and the forces that they will be dealing with. So a bit of everything really. But I think, yeah, if you really get that, the thing is a lot of people will jump straight to the kind of the sexier, you know, plyo and heavy strength stuff. And actually, it's about building the foundations first. So capacity is key. So I think if you start with the idea of building that local capacity in the muscles, doing the big compound exercises, but doing them to a point of, you know, slightly higher reps, building up that fitness, that strength, that actual tissue condition, as you said, and then progressing down into the heavier, kind of more forceful, more explosive stuff. But really, yeah, that is the ultimate outcome, because when we're running, it's an expression of strength at high speed. So ultimately, the person who can produce the most force in the short space of time has got the advantage. But there's much more to it than that. But from a purely S&T perspective, that is kind of the win.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Brilliant. I mean, we could chat all day, I'm sure. But I know you've got a tight schedule. So maybe we'll get you on another time and chat in some of these aspects in more detail. But
yeah, absolutely fine.
We'll leave the questions on training and stuff there. But for anyone who's been listening, maybe wants to get coached by you on the S&C side of things for their running, like how can they get in touch with you? And well, firstly, do you have any availability for that currently? And if so, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, so it's quite stacked at the minute. We do have a group-based program though, which is actually getting really popular, which there is space on. If you are interested, if you go to ppconditioning.com, that's probably the easiest way, or if you can just shoot me a message on Instagram if you like, and it is andyk_performance. I'm just checking that because I always get it wrong.
Yeah.
andyk_performance, yeah, on Instagram. I'm happy to chat on there and kind of signpost you as well. But yeah, like I say, happy to chat to anyone. There's resources on there, there's videos, there's links. And like I say, the programs themselves, it's mainly the group based one is open at the minute. One-to-ones, there is a waiting list, but happy if people want to have a chat about that too. Cheers for your time, Tim. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Yeah. Really valuable insights for everyone. And appreciated you taking the time out to come on. So thank you very much.
No worries. You have a great one.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers, mate.